Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Packaday Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to an all-new bonus episode of the Packaday Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. We are on Monday, officially after the draft. The dust has settled a little bit, and I wanted to take a few minutes just to kind of go through some of my favorite aspects and some of my least favorite aspects from this Packers draft. And I just want to hit this on the head before we even get started. Every single draft is going to have some positive takeaways, some negative takeaways. It bears no significance whatsoever on how these players actually turn out in the NFL. There'll be things that undoubtedly the Packers did amazing in this draft that they did not so well in this draft. And we all just need to let it play out. As we always talk about, the draft is the start of the process for these players. And what they become in the NFL is going to be up to them. It's going to be up to their coaches. It's going to be up to the Packers, all working together to hopefully hit on as many of these players and have these players hit on their upside as much as possible. But this is just the start of the process. But that being said, there are always things that you can look at from a process standpoint of how a team attacked the draft. So I'm going to look at some of that today, some of the players that I liked, some of the themes that I liked, and then some things that I didn't like. So I'll alternate. There's five things I liked, five things I didn't like. So we'll go thing I liked, didn't like, and so on and so forth until we get to the end here. But let's start off right away with something that I really enjoyed from this draft, and that was the second round. I think this is going to be very similar to what the Packers did in the second round a season ago. Last year, they took two players at positions of need that could come in and play right away, have a big impact while also having significant upside. And last year, they hit on Jaden Reed. And last year, they hit on Luke Musgrave in the second round. And this year, they come back in the second round and they get Javon Bullard and Edgerrin Cooper. And in a way, similar sort of way, like they moved down to get Jaden Reed and picked up some additional draft capital, they did the same thing this time with Edgerrin Cooper, moving down just one time, but picking up an additional fifth and sixth round pick. Now, they would eventually trade those exact fifth and sixth round picks to move up later in the draft, but the point still stands. I loved the entirety of this second round. Let's start actually with the trade. The fact that when they're on the board at 41, they probably had one of two things. One, as we talked about leading up to the draft, they probably had a board that had maybe four, five, six, seven guys that were still equally rated on their board. So they felt like they could comfortably move back four spots, pick up some additional draft capital, and still get one of those guys. And it's probably a bit of both here, but or they really liked Edgerrin Cooper, really wanted Edgerrin Cooper, and had a really good feel that he was still going to be there at 45. My guess is they probably had some contingency plans. I think it's within the realm of possibility that if they go to 45, that and Edgerrin Cooper is gone, that at that point, Javon Bullard might just be their pick. And then they go back and take one of the linebackers at the next spot, because all the linebackers actually were there later in the second round. So they could have gone about it that way. And I don't think it would have mattered probably a ton, but it worked out perfectly in the fact that they do move back from 41 to 45. They do get Edgerrin Cooper at that spot at 45, who to me was the best linebacker in the draft. I don't think it was particularly close. I would not have had any real major significant issue whatsoever if in pick 25, Green Bay went Edgerrin Cooper. And I don't think many people would have been upset about that. In hindsight, sure, because he was available at 45. You don't want to necessarily reach and take him at 25. And you would like Jordan Morgan still or whatever first round pick you wanted to come along with him. But if you would have told me ahead of the draft they got him at 25, I would have been like, yeah, that's fine. No big deal. No worries. They got the best linebacker in the draft. And it wouldn't have been that different from when they drafted Quay in round one. So getting him at 45 and not only not having to take him at 25, but being able to move down from 41 to 45, pick up that additional draft capital and still get their guy was beautiful from Goody. And similar to what, again, we talked about in the second round, I think this is going to be the core of their draft. Again, Edgerrin Cooper plus Javon Bullard. I think both of them are going to come in and very clearly be starters from day one. Edgerrin Cooper is going to be that starter next to Quay. Javon Bullard's going to be that starter likely next to Xavier McKinney. Maybe he could play a little in the slot as well, but I do think he just ultimately is that safety. And then they could just move some guys around in some sub packages. But I think if we're asking who's going to be the primary safety next to McKinney, I think that's just going to be Javon Bullard. Either way, these two have what you need to come in and play right now. They're going to make a big impact in Jeff Hafley's defense. You gain a ton of speed and explosiveness. And we have seen some of the best defenses in football have those two linebackers that are just causing chaos, can get sideline to sideline, and are all over the place. Now, there needs to be a controlled chaos with both of these players. They need to get better at taking on blocks. There needs to be a level of physicality that these two really learn to play with. And that's not to say that Cooper, by the way, does not play with physicality. He does, but he does it when he's hitting, not so much when he's taking on blocks, shedding blocks, and that sort of thing. But again, you get players that are ready to play now that fit perfectly in Jeff Hafley's defense that both have, in my opinion, significant upside. I believe that Bullard could be a top level safety in the NFL. I believe that Cooper could be a top level linebacker in the NFL. And we'll see where that ultimately pans out to. But this is going to be, I think, when we look back 5-10 years from now and say, you know, did Green Bay's draft go well or did it go poorly? I think we're going to squarely look at Edgerrin Cooper and Javon Bullard and what they were able to do by attacking that second round with positions of need, with high-end players, and say that was the crux of the draft. And I think he crushed it. These two could not be better fits for everything. We talked about a little bit, but position of need, what this defense needed, how they fit within the defense, upside level players, athleticism, speed. Both of them can even help on special teams if you need them to. It's a home run. It is an absolute home run. And regardless of what you think of round one and maybe some of the reaches, even some of the value at the end of the, whatever else there is, this round two is what this draft will come down to. And I think Goody got two big time players who are going to come in and make an impact from day one while also picking up those extra draft picks by moving down from 41 to 45. So huge hit for me, round two of the draft. A miss, drafting a lot of non-premium positions. And what I mean here is a lot of draft, you know, experts and a lot of GMs will attack the draft aggressively with premium position players first in the draft and then fill in some of those non-premium positions. And I've always defined premium positions as quarterback, offensive tackle. I think wide receiver is actually getting to be in that conversation with how important that position is, but we'll just keep it right now for ease. Quarterback, offensive tackle, defensive line, edge rusher, and corner. Those are the ones that we label premium positions. If you look at the positions that are getting paid at an extremely high level, quarterback, offensive tackle, pass rusher, defensive lineman, and corner, like it's pretty much a guarantee. And then you've got your other positions that aren't considered premium that do usually go lower on the free agent market that aren't, you know, there's not as much resources poured into. And Green Bay, a lot of times, you know, really focuses on that same mentality, attacking a lot of those premium positions. To be clear here, the most important thing is getting good football players. If you get a really great safety and an off-ball linebacker in the second round of this draft, like we just talked about, is one of my favorite aspects of this draft. I don't care that Edgerrin Cooper was a non-premium position. I don't care that Javon Bullard was a quote-unquote non-premium position. But I do think if you look at this draft as a whole, you get Jordan Morgan as an offensive tackle. That's a premium position. And then you go through basically the entirety of the draft until their final three picks. Travis Glover, if he stays at offensive tackle, which he might have to kick inside. Michael Pratt at corner. And Kalen King, if he stays at corner. There are some that think he's a safety. I think he's going to be a corner in Green Bay, so I don't think we even need to go into that discussion. But it really was just Morgan. And that's even if he stays at offensive tackle. He could end up as guard as well. So it was just a bunch of, you know, really what, if you look at it, linebacker, safety, running back, linebacker, safety, interior offensive lineman, safety. That was the middle of their draft. And the only reason that I sort of bring this up in this conversation as well is those are usually the types of players that you can find a little bit cheaper in free agency, or at least even if you're looking for a premium one, you're going to get them at a less premium than some of the other positions like tackle and quarterback. For example, a quarterback, top quarterback is going to go for $60 million. A top wide receiver we're seeing is going to go for extreme money. Top offensive tackle is going for extreme money. Defensive line, edge, corner. Those top players are all going for extreme money. Outside of Xavier McKinney, who the Packers signed, those safeties did not go for anything this offseason. We did see some linebackers get paid, but it was sort of in that 10 to 12 million tier. We didn't necessarily see the super high-end linebackers, and a lot of times we just don't get that anymore. You know, running back is another one. And again, we'll see some players start to get paid, but even the highest of the highest paid running backs, unless you're a Christian McCaffrey or someone like that, they're not getting paid that $30, $40 million per season. So they drafted a bunch of players at non-premium positions. I also think that we need to bring up here that there were a lot of cheap safeties in the market. And what I mean by that is we talked all offseason about Jordan Fuller, about Julian Blackman. There's Micah Hyde that's still on the market. Jordan Poyer went for 1 year, $2 million. I believe it was to the Dolphins. Safeties went cheap. Justin Simmons is still chilling out there. Like, you can find pretty cheap safeties in free agency. And the reason that that matters a little bit in this discussion, when you draft three safeties, let's just say, for example, that because I think Xavier McKinney was the right move to make, even though it was a big contract. I think we all love that move. I think Javon Bullard in the second round was a great move to make. I think he's a potential high-end player that is going to be exactly what this defense needs, that can also play in the slot. I have no issue with that pick as well. But let's just say that they signed a Julian Blackman for a reasonable contract going into the draft. Does that save you from having to spend a fourth round pick on Evan Williams or a fifth round pick on, you know, Ketan Oladipo? Those are questions that I think you can ask a little bit. And the reason that I say that is I think if you give Jordan Morgan or one of those, Jordan Morgan, if you give Jordan Fuller or one of those cheap safeties a contract, not only do you get a better player right now, Julian Blackman, I still think actually has legitimate upside. And I also think you basically gain a fourth round pick back. So what I mean by this is, let's say you sign Julian Blackman, you're basically paying, I think he got like $5 million, somewhere around there for a 1 year deal. You're giving him $5 million. You're paying $5 million not only for a better safety right now, but you're also getting a fourth round pick in return because maybe you don't have to pick an Evan Williams in the fourth round then. So that's sort of the things that I look at is, yes, it's great that you got the safeties and remade the room. And a lot of it I don't necessarily disagree with, but drafting a lot of players that you can sort of find for cheap in free agency, that is sort of just one of those philosophies that you have to look at and sort of question maybe a little bit more long-term. Again, does it mean that they didn't get good players or good safeties? No, all these guys could turn out. They can be core special teamers. You get some really good safeties on some really cheap contracts potentially. So there's still an upside here. It's just not as much of an upside as if you tack some of the premium positions a little bit more. And that leads us into a hit, because one of the things that they did do very well is they hit on their positions of need. And yes, these are non-premium positions. Call them what you want. But the Packers desperately needed linebackers, safeties, interior offensive linemen, and a running back. Those were their biggest positions of need. So yeah, sometimes you would like to not maybe have to spend quite as much in draft capital and resources on some of those positions, and you'd maybe like to find them a little bit cheaper. But what did they do? They hit all of their positions of need in this draft. And if, yes, they cost draft capital, but from a salary cap standpoint, their linebackers, Edgerrin Cooper is going to make nothing. Hopper's going to make nothing. Bullard's going to make nothing. Oladapo's going to make nothing. Evan Williams is going to make nothing. The interior offensive linemen later in the draft are going to make nothing. Marshawn Lloyd is going to make nothing. So you got a lot of players that you really needed in positions that needed to be filled that I think can come in and help you right now. And you're paying absolutely nothing for them really for like the next 4 years. So It's an interesting sort of, how do you weigh this out? Yes, they attacked the draft in an aggressive way with non-premium positions, but they also attacked it by aggressively attacking their positions of need. So there, again, there's pluses and minuses with this. You can see both sides. It doesn't always have to be 100% one way or 100% of the other. You can say, yeah, you know, unfortunately they did have to kind of go with some of those positions that are a little less valued in the NFL, but you can also say, hey, I think they got positions of need while attacking and getting good players at those positions of need. There's a swing both ways, and you can just weigh it out however you want to weigh it out. And then I'll swing it back the other way a little bit. My next miss in this draft is, unfortunately, their positions of need, also not only non-premium positions, but also came from some of the weaker groups in this draft. Meaning, going into the draft, we sort of knew ahead of time, safety, off-ball linebacker, and running back were three of the weakest positions in this draft. And the reason I think this is at least worth bringing up is last year, we praised Goody, rightfully so, for attacking the positions of strength in the draft, specifically tight end and wide receiver. And, you know, edge rusher early was another one where there was a bunch of edge rushers in the first round. They attacked that edge rusher position with LVN. Then they go and get two tight ends from a really strong class in Luke Musgrave and Tucker Kraft. And then they go get wide receivers from a very deep class as well with Dontavian Wicks and Jaden Reed. And then they also got Dubose in the seventh, and then even attacked it more with Malik Heath as an undrafted free agent. So we praised, rightfully, Goody for attacking the draft last year by navigating it with all the positions that were so strong in the draft. I will say this, Goody last year had the, I don't know if you want to call it the benefit, but of the benefit, I guess, of needing that roster needed talent everywhere. And he had a lot of picks to address it. So need really didn't need to go in the conversation because they kind of needed everything. This year, there were some more specific needs that they needed to attack. And it just so happened that they were at positions that were not as deep. That being said, linebacker, not a deep position. They still got the best guy, Edgerrin Cooper. Take the rest of the linebacker group out of this entire draft and just focus on Edgerrin Cooper. You put Edgerrin Cooper in one of the strongest linebacker drafts in the history of football. To me, he still goes early second round every single time. That's the type of player that he was. I do not believe that was a reach. I do not believe that was overtaking a linebacker because he was the best one in a poor group. I think he was valued right around pick 45, regardless of every other linebacker in the draft. That's where they took him, and I think they got very good value with Edgerrin Cooper at that spot. Javon Bullard, I believe, regardless of any other safeties in the draft, if you take Javon Bullard and put him in one of the strongest safety classes ever, I think mid to late second round was always going to be his grade. I don't believe that they reached for Javon Bullard because he was the best of a bad group of safeties. I think the value is there. Marshawn Lloyd, poor running back class, but what was the strength of the running back class? The strength of the running back class was that third, fourth round range where there were going to be a bunch of running backs that were good running backs that were going to go all sort of in that same area. Marshawn Lloyd, exactly that. And Daniel Jeremiah had him as the number one running back in this class. That was what was sort of all over the place. There wasn't necessarily a consensus number one. They were all kind of a similar range, but that similar range was always going to be in that third to fourth round. So yes, they did select some players from some weaker classes, but I don't believe Lloyd, Cooper, or Bullard specifically had any effect on that whatsoever, and I think they went in the positions they would have went in any other draft. Now, the other ones, we can have a little bit more of a conversation on. If you look at Oladapo, if you look at Hopper, if you look at Evan Williams, those I think are a little bit more fair to discuss of, hey, were those the values that you really needed at those specific areas of the draft? And we'll talk about that a little bit more in just a moment, but it is at least worth noting. And again, I don't think it's going to be detrimental to these players long-term, but they did get some of the weaker draft groups in this draft, again, being, you know, running back, off-ball linebacker, and safety. Some of it I don't think affected, but maybe the Williams and the Oladapo and a couple of those were maybe a little bit more in Hopper from, you know, some weak draft classes, but you still needed to fill those positions of need. All right, hit. Getting faster and more physical, especially on defense and special teams. And I'm going to label five players here specifically. Edgerrin Cooper, Javon Bullard, Tyron Hopper, Evan Williams, and Ketan Oladapo. I think these are fast, flowing linebackers and safeties that are aggressive moving forward, that are attacking players, that have good speed, especially guys like Cooper and Bullard, even Evan Williams. I think these guys flash to the football And I think they're not only going to help on defense become a more attacking physical defense that has that speed from the back end moving forward, but I also think that you're going to see this show up on special teams. We'll see how much they use Edgerrin Cooper on special teams, but he was a core special teams guy at Texas A&M. We'll see again how much they use Javon Bullard, but Tyron Hopper, Evan Williams, and Ketan Oladapo should be core special teamers immediately. And I think getting these very physical, attacking, fast players that can not only help on defense, that I think gives us a tell into what Jeff Hafley wants to be as a defense, attacking, attacking, physical, rallying to the football. I think that's what we're going to see. I think you got a glimpse into that with the players that they liked, but I guarantee you Rich Bisaccia is also drooling about the aspect of getting these guys on their special teams unit, especially as we have kick return, you know, rules changed. And I think special teams are going to have a little bit of an added value moving forward. Getting these guys that can go down and attack and are fearless is going to pay dividends, not only on defense and not only on special teams. And I think that was a huge win in this draft as well. Hey, friends. You may not know this because usually you hear me talking about the Packers 365 days a year, but I'm actually a massive, massive fan of the NBA playoffs. And while I've always enjoyed NBA basketball, it's been taken to an entirely different level as I've been utilizing Prize Picks to test my skills and add to that excitement level of the NBA playoffs. Prize Picks is the most fun that I have ever had, winning up to 100 times my money, and there's never been a better time to join the Prize Picks community. Did you know that there's over 5 million members that have already downloaded the app? 5 million! This playoff season, star players are in play in a significant way. Keep an eye out for starred players on the board, and you could receive a 10% payout boost if they're in your winning lineup. This week, I'm going with Brooke Lopez, Paul George, and Jalen Brunson for rebounds, points, and assists, respectively. And I'm already geeking out about putting Caitlin Clark's three-pointers made stat line in my lineup when women's season tips off in just over a month. Basketball plus Prize Picks equals epic excitement. So what are you waiting for? Download the app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. There is nothing quite like the thrill of live NBA playoff basketball this time of year. And if you haven't had the opportunity to catch a playoff game in person, let me just tell you, you are missing out. But you don't need to be. You could attend an NBA playoff game easily with the use of Game Time. Game Time is an authorized ticket marketplace of the NBA, which makes getting playoff tickets even faster and easier. And guess what? Prices actually go down the closer that you get to tip off. With killer last minute deals, all-in prices, seat views, and their lowest price guarantee, Game Time takes all the awful, frustrating aspects of purchasing tickets out of the equation, and they help you get the perfect tickets that you want. I'm on my Game Time app right now, scrolling through Bucks tickets for Game 5, and not only are there plenty of great seats available, but the deals are incredible, and I can literally click and purchase any number of amazing deals right now. The best thing about Game Time is definitely the ease of use, no question about it, but their lowest price guarantee and their cancellation protection have come in huge for me in the past and are two more of my favorite features. Let me just say it again. The last minute deals come in clutch every single time. You can save up to 60% by buying last minute tickets for sports, concerts, comedy shows, and so much more. So get in on the action and take the guesswork out of buying NBA tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY, P-A-C-K-A-D-A-Y, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed. Next, one of my bigger misses in this draft. I guess mine too, technically. But I'm gonna go down with the ship on this one, which is exactly what Dane Brugler said in his draft review today. Passing on Jaden Hicks. That to me was one of the bigger misses for the Packers in this draft. And I'll start by saying I have no issues with the Packers passing on him in the first 2 days. No, none whatsoever. I know some people had him as a potential first round pick, others a second round pick, some as a third. You could tell, and just by Goody's definition of what he wanted in a safety, that Javon Bullard was going to be their exact type of safety that they wanted. It was always going to be Javon Bullard over Jaden Hicks. And clearly, by the way, the NFL didn't value Jaden Hicks as much. He went late round four. So I have no issue whatsoever in Bullard over Hicks. I have no issue with the fact that they took, now I would have taken Hicks over Hopper, but that's another discussion. Either way, I have no problem with them taking any of those players over Jaden Hicks in the first 2 days. But I think when you're in the fourth round and having a Jaden Hicks still there and moving up aggressively in the fourth round to go get a safety and still passing on Jaden Hicks, that's the one that I think is a little bit more interesting and is going to be worth tracking over the course of time. Now, if you personally would like to take the word of every single NFL scout and personnel, department, employee and Brian Gutekunst and a NFL scouting staff that has spent every single waking moment of the past year breaking down Evan Williams and Jaden Hicks and watching an enormous amount of tape and going and interviewing people about Jaden Hicks and reviewing his medicals and everything else, and you would like to take their word over mine, I totally get that. And gun to my head and you said, hey, who's going to be a better NFL player? Would you like to take the word of the Packers or mine? And you said your life depends on it. I'm probably just going to say, yeah, take the word of the Packers. They've spent more time on this. I'll go with them. But the more and more that I watch Jaden Hicks, the more and more that I think he's going to be a really good NFL player. I think there was so much value there late in the fourth. And here's the other thing as well. Like, first, I've talked about it all, that Jaden Hicks, I think, is a beautiful pairing with Xavier McKinney. I think Xavier McKinney actually unlocks all of the upside of Jaden Hicks and minimizes a lot of his weaknesses. Now, I know they want to be versatile, and I would understand that, too, if they drafted all three safeties that were super versatile. But you look at Ketan Oladapo, he, to me, is going to be a box safety. I don't think he has a ton of that versatility. So if they were willing to do that, again, Jaden Hicks in the fourth made all the sense in the world, not to mention they moved up for Evan Williams, and they clearly didn't know that at the time, you know, and maybe the benefit of hindsight is 20/20 here. But if they would have just stayed where they were at the end of the fourth and not given up pick 190 to go up and get Evan Williams, Jaden Hicks still would have been there. So even if you move up, I would have taken Jaden Hicks over Evan Williams, but they could have stayed and ultimately taken Jaden Hicks, or at least even if Evan Williams wasn't there, they maybe would have at least had a backup plan then that they could have taken Jaden Hicks. Not that this matters either, but if you look at the consensus draft board, Jaden Hicks was at number 69 and Evan Williams was at 223. Again, you look at Jim Nagy. You know, Jim Nagy said that a lot of teams were looking at Evan Williams in day four and hoping that he was going to fall to them, in round four. And the Packers didn't wait. They moved up and they got their guy. And time will tell what is ultimately the better player here. But one thing I'll add is if they did not move up in the draft for Evan Williams and had they stayed just with Jordan Hicks, they would have kept pick 190. They could have added another offensive lineman like a Dylan McMahon or a Christian Mahogany. They could have added a Tanner McLaughlin at tight end. They could have added a Christian Boyd along the defensive line, somebody that they had in for a top 30 visit. Not to say that that's the be all end all either. Go get the player that you like, but they could have stayed, got Jaden Hicks, a player that a lot of people had rated over Evan Williams, and they could have kept pick 190 and maybe added another piece to their draft class as well. That's the direction that I would have gone in. These are the fun discussions of the draft. This is not to, you know, trash Evan Williams, say he's going to suck or anything like that. This is just sort of the fun aspects of, like, you can have this, you can have column A or column B. Which one is your preference? And for me, column A is Evan Williams and column B is Jaden Hicks in a pick 190 where you can attack the draft still. To me, column B is much more attractive than column A. But these are the fun things that we get to play out over the course of the next 4 to 8 years and see, yep, Andy and the consensus draft board were right and Jaden Hicks was way better. Or nope, yeah, trust the NFL guys that maybe know what they're talking about and Evan Williams ended up being way better and Jaden Hicks is out of the league in 2 years. Time will tell. It'll be very fun to keep an eye on. My next hit in this draft, competition. Backup quarterback, competition. Running back, not only for that number two spot, but maybe for who makes the team. You know, now AJ Dillon, Emmanuel Wilson, any other running backs they pick up, they're going to have to fight for that number three spot now because, you know, Marshawn Lloyd, third round pick, he's not going anywhere. Offensive line, starter spots are up for grabs. Backup spots are up for grabs. Roster spots are up for grabs. They added three offensive linemen. They added another in undrafted free agency. Like, this is going to be a very competitive group, not only for snaps, but I think Rashid Walker clearly on notice at left tackle with them taking a left tackle. I think Josh Myers is definitely on notice. I think, you know, Sean Ryan will have to earn his spot. And then guys like Andre Dillard, Royce Newman, Caleb Jones, Luke Tenuta, Kadeem Telford, they're all going to have to try to earn their spots just to get on this 53-man roster. And so are the draft picks that they took. So those are going to be interesting, you know, competitive battles in training camp and in preseason. But they added a lot of competition on the offensive line. Linebacker, I think clearly Edgerrin Cooper is going to go up to the top of that list. But, you know, you have now Hopper and McDuffie maybe fighting for that number three spot. And now some of those Christian Welches, Christian Young, maybe even Eric Wilson, they're going to have to fight for some of those back end roster spots. Safety, everything, right? Yeah, Xavier McKinney is going to be one of those. But I guarantee you, Javon Bullard and Oladapo and Williams, those guys are going to fight. Anthony Johnson Jr., they'll fight for the other roster spot at number two safety, number three safety, number four safety, number five safety. You still have Zane Anderson that was on the roster all of last year. You still have Benny Sapp, who was on the roster all of last year. Again, Anthony Johnson Jr. as well. This is a much, much, much more competitive safety room. Even long snapper, they go get Peter Bowden from Wisconsin. I believe that that long snapper battle is completely up for grabs now. So they have added competition everywhere. They had a competition, or they have competition at a lot of the other spots already, but this is now going to drive this team, and a bunch of these roster battles are going to be really exciting and fun to watch. All right. My last miss here. This is the last one, the last miss. We need to take this with an extreme grain of salt, because I talked about this when I talked about Jaden Hicks, and the Packers don't care about the consensus draft board. They don't care where, you know, media scouts and online scouts and scouts from their couch have players rated. They care what their scouts say, what their big board said, and they are going to go off of that, rightfully so, understandably so. So it ultimately does not matter where players were on consensus, but I do want to bring up a couple points here just to kind of look at it. And I think a little bit of a miss in this draft, specifically in the middle of the draft, was maybe overdrafting some players based on consensus. If we look through the draft, Jordan Morgan was the 25th pick in the draft. He was 36th on the big board, consensus big board, a drop of 11 picks. Not a big deal there. That's right in the same range. Edgerrin Cooper went 45. He was ranked 46th on the consensus big board. Same. Javon Bullard was 58. You know, drafted at 58, he was 59th on the consensus big board. Same. Marshawn Lloyd was 88th. He was 88th on the big board. Same. Then you got to the middle of the draft. Tyron Hopper, they drafted at 91. He was 172 on the consensus big board. Evan Williams was 111. He was 223, a change of, or a drop of negative 112 points from one to the other. Jacob Monk was 163 pick. He was 278th on the consensus big board. A difference of 115 spots. Then you sort of got to a different area of the draft. Ketan Oladapo was 169th pick. He was 141 on the consensus big board, an add of 28 points. Travis Glover, not too bad, but it was drafted at 202. The consensus was 237, a drop of negative 35 points, but at that point, same range. And then Michael Pratt was a gain of 126 spots. He was 119 on the consensus big board, went 245 overall. And Kalen King was 166 on the consensus big board and went 255 overall. The net difference was a negative 113 from the consensus big board to the Packers draft board. Prior to their final seventh round picks, though, so take Michael Pratt and Kalen King out of the equation, and they were negative 328 in difference from the consensus big board. Now, the good news is that Jordan Morgan, Edgerrin Cooper, Javon Bullard and Marshawn Lloyd were only a difference of 13. They were basically the exact same as what the consensus big board had. There was no real difference there. The other good news is that Oladapo, Glover, Pratt, and King combined were plus 208. That is fantastic value at the end of the draft. That middle three, Hopper, Williams, and Monk, were negative 308 in difference. That's the area where you're wondering, all right, could they have maybe attacked things a little bit differently? That's where I talked about Jaden Hicks a little bit. And you might be thinking, as I mentioned at the onset of this conversation here, is any consensus doesn't matter. You're going to take the word of the NFL scouts and the GM and things like that. You are, like I said earlier, correct. I totally get that. But consensus has mattered a bit in a few interesting different ways. Zach Cruz put this together today from Packers Wire, and their reaches from the consensus draft board to where Green Bay actually took them since 2022, so over the course of the last couple seasons, Sean Clifford was negative 10 on the board, negative 110 on the board, excuse me. We'll see how he turns out. He seems like a very good backup so far. Tariq Carpenter was negative 72. He did not work out. Jonathan Ford, negative 66. So far has not been able to make the active roster. Anders Carlson, negative 52. Really struggled that kicker a season ago. Samori Toure, negative 33. Backup number 6, 7, 8 wide receiver. Quay Walker was negative 29, which I think the easiest way to say it is just he has not lived up to expectations so far. Good linebacker, not great linebacker, but definitely has not lived up to the, 25th, 26th overall pick, wherever he was actually drafted. And Lou Nichols was negative 24 from where the consensus draft board was. He ended up getting cut in camp. The one exception was Jaden Reed, who is negative 36, and he has obviously worked out extremely well so far, but we're looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Eight players that they really sort of quote-unquote reached on, and only one, Jaden Reed, has sort of been the exception to the rule so far. We'll still see what Sean Clifford becomes, and Quay can still break out. Anders Carlson could still be good. We'll see. But so far, Jaden Reed, the only one that really they drafted over consensus and has really been a big hit so far. Now, Arif Hassan does an amazing job of putting together a consensus big board every single year, and Austin Gale put this together. But over the last 10 years, these are the players that have been the most overdrafted players based on the consensus draft board. All right. There are two players that have hit: Mitch Morse, who's been a really solid center in the NFL in 2015, and Darius Leonard, who had a really good run at linebacker it was a 2018 pick, and then lately has fallen off mostly due to injuries. There's some players on this list like Jaden Reed that we talked about that are on the right track already. But here was the entire list. Tyquan Thornton has not worked out, has been a bust. Breland Speaks, bust. Mitch Morse, we said it was a hit. Jelani Tavai, bust. Terrell Edmonds, bust. Marquise Blair, bust. Alante Taylor, not great. Jordan Brooks, he just got a contract, but certainly did not work out in Seattle. Dante Pettis, bust. Titus Howard, Howard's the interesting one. I'm trying to remember, I always get Titus Howard mixed up with somebody else. Give me one second here. So Titus Howard, the offensive tackle, obviously has done very, very well in Houston. So that's been, to me, another big hit. Darius Leonard, hit. Wandell Robinson, bust. Cole Strange, not worked out. Ben Benagu, bust. Daryl Taylor, not worked out. Damon Arnett, bust. Jaquiski Tartt was okay. Daniel Jones at quarterback has not worked out. Aaron Banks has been okay for the 49ers. Adam Shaheen was a bust for the Bears. Walker Little's been okay. Jonathan Mingo, we'll have to wait and see. Mason Smith was taken this year. Rashad Penny, bust. Gerald Everett was okay. Jaden Reed, obviously very good for Green Bay so far. LJ Collier, bust. Donovan Smith, okay. Jatavius Martin didn't do much last year. And then Ruka Rohiro was this year's pick. But overall, over the last 10 years, when teams have gone aggressively against the consensus big board, it has not worked out. Furthermore, especially in the first round, now again, Jordan Morgan was not a major reach in the first round, but the biggest reaches over the course of the last handful of seasons, in the first round, Jack Campbell for the Lions struggled last year. Will McDonald did nothing for the Jets. Quay Walker, again, good, but hasn't lived up to expectations. Cole Strange did not work out. Peyton Turner did not work out. Alex Leatherwood didn't work out. Jamin Davis has been okay, but hasn't lived up to first round expectations. Same with Jordan Brooks at linebacker. Damon Arnett was a bust, and Isaiah Wilson was a bust. So yes, should you trust the NFL far more often than not? If my life was on the line, am I trusting the NFL GMs or the consensus big board? I'm going to trust the NFL GMs. But NFL GMs also get this stuff wrong a lot. And far more often than not, when they go way above consensus, it usually does not work out for them.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, I guess I do have a couple other ones left here. My bad. I was going a little too quickly. So my hits, another big thing that I wanted to go over as a hit in this draft was they got Packers people. And what I mean by that is locker room people and just guys that are going to come in and work super hard, team captains. I mentioned this the other day. Jordan Morgan, Ketan Oladapo, Tyron Hopper, Jacob Monk, Evan Williams, Michael Pratt, all team captains. And then Javon Bullard was known as a leader within that locker room, was a high school team captain. Marshawn Lloyd was a high school team captain. Kalen King was a two-time high school team captain. They got a bunch of guys that are, you know, going to come in, add to that locker room, be leaders, be hard workers. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be great NFL players, but it means two things. One, I do believe that this locker room is in a pretty special place right now with a bunch of players that do want to work hard, that get along well, that are not going to be down when adversity hits. It does feel like they have a very tight-knit group that loves football, wants to get better at football, and wants to be great. And I think they added to that room. And I think that is worth noting. The other thing I'll say is the players that are team captains that work extremely hard, that are weight room junkies and everything else, I just feel like they have a much better chance of hitting their ceilings and a lesser chance of just sort of, you know, being complete busts and not turning out. These are players that care about the game, that are dedicated to football, that eat, you know, drink, whatever, sleep, eat football, and are going to be probably digesting it at that same level in the NFL that they were at college. So I think it's super important for the locker room the way it is. I think it's also super important that they, you know, continue to cultivate that, and it makes it more likely that they're going to hit on their ceilings and less likely that they're going to hit on their floors. And last but not least, a miss had nothing to do with the Packers, but just watching the division get some really, really good players. Caleb Williams, Rome Odunze in the top 10 to Chicago. They also came back in the third round and drafted Kieran Amagaji, who was a player that I really liked. And Austin Booker was one of my favorite defensive ends who they traded back into the fifth round for and got, I think, a steal of a player in Austin Booker. So I thought they got some really good players. The Vikings, now later in the draft, they didn't have much to work with, but we can discuss J.J. McCarthy, the upside, the downside, how people view him. Not so much necessarily that they got him, but they did get their quarterback that I think they wanted. And the bigger thing here is there was a lot of talk that they were going to have to give up pick 23, maybe a future first round pick to move up and aggressively get McCarthy. They had to move up a little bit, but they basically got him where they were expected to get him and didn't have to give up a ton of draft capital to do so. That was still a win for Minnesota. And then, yes, they traded up aggressively again, but they got arguably the best edge rusher in the draft and a player that fits extremely well in Brian Flores' defense. That to me was a big hit for them. And then Terrion Arnold and Ennis Rakestraw, two of my favorite players in this draft, go to the Lions. They fit the scheme. They're attacking football players. Rakestraw is going to fit right in with the ankle biting, knee cap chopping, whatever, Detroit Lions. He's a perfect fit for that defense in a huge position of need. These were all players I really, really liked that all ended up in the division. That's always going to happen where you see some really good players go to your division foes. But I thought specifically Caleb Williams, Rome Odunze, Kieran Amagaji, Austin Booker, J.J. McCarthy, Dallas Turner, Terrion Arnold, Ennis Rakestraw, all going in the division is a little bit tough to see because there are some really, really talented football players there. Again, none of all of these today, even the hits don't mean that they're going to hit. The misses don't mean they're going to miss. A lot of people had this grade as a B+, B minus for the Packers. I think it feels about right. They hit a lot of needs. I thought their second round was absolutely awesome. I think you can make a really strong case for their top four picks being extremely good. The middle was a little bit aggressive. You know, when they go up and they get three players that were drafted so extremely over consensus, we'll see what that ultimately means in the long run. But, you know, the Hopper pick, probably a bit over aggressive. The Evan Williams pick, probably a bit over aggressive. But then they came back at the end of the draft and got a ton of value with their late round picks. We talked about it being some non-premium positions. Overall, I thought it was a really good draft. I thought it was good, solid, really good, maybe great. But I didn't think it was maybe the sexiest draft. I think not maybe hitting more on those, you know, premium positions with maybe some high-end players, not maybe getting some players that were in that middle of the draft, like a Jaden Hicks, maybe rated a little bit higher. But again, some great value at the end. And I think their top four is very, very strong. I think it's a really good draft. I don't think there's anyone that's saying anything negative about Green Bay's draft. So we'll see. This is the fun part about it, is breaking it down. And we'll look at it again, like I do every 4 years. 4 years from now, we'll do a deep dive into exactly what these players became, what went well, what went wrong. And we'll evaluate it all and we'll give it an actual grade in 4 years from now. But looking at the process and looking at the draft as a whole and the sort of immediate, you know, aftershock of everything that happened, these were some of the things that I really loved and some things that I thought maybe Green Bay missed on just a little bit. And there's always nuance there. You look at those non-premium positions, at positions that weren't the strongest in the draft. They also were a hit because they hit on positions of need. And I didn't think they went, you know, and overdrafted guys like Cooper and Bullard and things like that. So weigh it out. I would love to know your thoughts on it. I think overall Green Bay had a very nice weekend, got better as a football team. And now it's going to be fun to see what they actually become. Shout out to our all new Pack-A-Day podcast members, Dan Guestford, David Finley, Andrew Sikun, Jan Kelsey or Jan Kelsey, and Brendan Hammond, and John Hooper. Sorry, just butchering names left and right there. My apologies, guys, but thank you for becoming Pack-A-Day podcast YouTube members. And shout out, of course, to our all pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Shea Bradad, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Bremen, David Prendergast, Dan Miller, Alex Huang, Arnaldo Espinoza, and Michael Shipper. You guys are the best. I'll see you soon. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.